Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday Drive. Boy, sun just came out. Haven't seen much sunshine all day today, but the sun has come out. It's been a breezy, cool Thursday. A day now, we were talking just before we came on the air, Dan and I. It's, you know, the city of Auburn is observing Halloween tonight, trick-or-treat tonight, downtown trick-or-treat. The final downtown trick-or-treat is on tap for tonight. And the city, you know, sent out a note saying, so today would be the observance of trick-or-treat. But a lot of neighborhoods, and it turns out including mine, have decided that they're going to go ahead and trick-or-treat on Halloween. So good for the kids. Great situation where, you know, kids, if they know where to go, can trick-or-treat for two nights. Man, that we never had a situation like that when I was a kid. We were lucky. Lucky if you know, you could find a few houses on Halloween that that you'd be able to trick or treat at. But anyway, so be prepared for that. You may have trick or treaters tonight, but then you may have trick or treaters tomorrow night as well. We hope that we're not tricking you here this afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew is not with us again today. We're in the studio for the final time this week because tomorrow we'll be out at Rally House out at Tigertown.
Yeah, looking forward to taking the show on the road as we get ready for the big Saturday night showdown between Auburn and Kentucky, a game where, you know, Hugh Freeze, some folks were wondering if, you know, earlier in the season, if he was going to make it to the Kentucky game after that first five for Auburn. He is coaching Saturday night. Mark Stoops is coaching Saturday night, and I think those are – you know, those feel like two of the more tenuous situations in the conference right now. Both coaches could really use a win to keep spirits high with some tough games left to play this season. And yeah, I think for Hugh Freeze, you know, the thought of picking up some momentum, winning back-to-back conference games would be it would really help considering some of the bumps and bruises this team took along the way.
Yeah, we had a chance to, you know, spend a few minutes. Usually it's about 5 minutes with Hugh Freeze at the end of practice today. And he was talking, he was asked about, you know, the team's mental makeup and how they are and everything. And as he was, but while he was talking or just before he was talking, we got a chance to see the end of practice. I was surprised, quite frankly, to see how much energy there was, and the guys looked like they were having a great time out there at the end of practice today. So, I mean, that is something that there hasn't been. You know, when you talk about Brian Kelly's situation at LSU, it looked like the players just said, forget this, in the second half last week, and they had no life at all. This Auburn team, despite, you know, its problems, and, you know, primarily offensively, they have not, they don't look like one bit they have tossed in the towel or are looking for, you know, other options beyond this or not interested in finishing out the season. So that, I think, is a credit to this team, to the coaching staff and the leadership and the players on this team and the team chemistry that they have as they go into the game Saturday night.
Yeah, I think that effort has not been a problem, and I think Hugh Freeze, it's a credit to him, and also it's one of the things that, you know, one of the reasons he's still here is because effort has not been a problem.
Oh, no, if you'd seen this team roll over and, you know, the last loss or two in the SEC in that four-game losing streak had been, you know, non-competitive, it's hard to believe that he'd be here.
And I think there were two moments distinctly. I mean, Auburn had the early lead against Georgia. There were two moments that come to mind immediately where in the end of the first half against Missouri and at the end of the first half against Arkansas, where it feels like that opponent is going to start,
mm-hmm.
you know, to push the boulder.
Yeah, there's a chance.
They're going to start to roll downhill. And to Auburn's credit, they made the play against Missouri, the interception that stopped that late Missouri drive, and they after going down 11, they came out in the second half and played, you know, really really solid football on both sides of the ball. Didn't convert enough, and this is something that's probably important for Auburn's last three SEC games. Did not convert enough goal-to-go opportunities.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, red zone.
Red zone, but I think especially goal-to-go.
Yes.
When you get to first and goal, it's a huge win for the defense if you're settling for a field goal at the end of that. If that ends in 3 points, you've let the other team off the hook. You've given them a boost.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about the Oklahoma game. Auburn has to settle for a field goal on a goal-to-go possession. Missouri. It feels like Auburn's about to bury Missouri at goal to go.
Of course, had Auburn been able to make field goals against Missouri, sure. that could have been completely different.
But I don't think the goal is, well, we need to get to goal.
But those weren't goal to go either. Those were the field goals that were missed at Missouri.
No. But settling for a field goal at all when it's first and goal.
Oh,
is
yes.
My point.
Yeah, like, I'm just saying those weren't goal to go, the missed field goals there at Missouri.
I'm not talking about the missed field goals.
Right.
I'm saying Auburn has settled for possessions
right.
where they kicked a field goal, but it was first and goal. And it's like if you had first and goal against Oklahoma and kicked a field goal. You had first and goal and what was second goal at the two against Missouri
yep.
and kicked a field goal. And it's like and look at how close those games were. And part of the reason I know you can talk about the missed field goals and you can talk about some of the other mistakes made, or you can talk about the officiating. But the fact is, Auburn had opportunities to impose their will at the goal line, and they had to settle for a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped the other team. It gave the other team a boost. And if you wanted to see progress, like if Auburn can start finishing red zone possessions and especially goal to goes
with touchdowns,
mm-hmm. that would be a step in the right direction
for Hugh Freeze
and this
no
offense
question.
Over the last three games.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no
now,
question.
Yes,
about
when
it.
You kick the field goals, you need to make them.
Yeah,
like
that's true.
That's important, too. But I think in general, like if it's first and goal at the eight and that possession ends with you attempting a field goal, the defense won.
They did. I feel worse. I feel more frustrated when it's first and goal, like inside the five, and you end up with a field goal.
But the fact is, like in that situation, like if it's first and goal and you're attempting a field goal, the other team feels like they dodged a bullet because they didn't give up a touchdown when you had it within the 10-yard line. And so I think that's mm-hmm. something Auburn, like, I mean, yes, making the field goals is crucial too. But even settling for a field goal when it's first and goal, like that's something this offense has done far too often this season. In moments where at the end of that game you're thinking, boy, if you'd been able to add four more points on one or two of those possessions, like maybe you're thinking this is a different feeling game.
Some college football coaching news of the day. While we're over there today, it was announced. While we're sitting waiting for Hugh Freeze. The announcement came that Matt Rhule of Nebraska, who had, you know, a lot of people had pegged as the top mm-hmm. candidate at Penn State, signs a two-year extension, gets a $15 million two-year extension to stay at Nebraska. One of the craziest things. Now, a lot of the beat writers, we didn't have the audio, on, so we're just reading the quotes. When Pete Nakos said sources say that Matt Rhule says they're going to, I'm trying to figure the exact quote. It was going to work on improving the roster now. It's like, until he got the extension, he wasn't going to try to improve the roster. I mean, I'm sure that's not the way it was.
Well, we wondered though when Indiana announced their extension, and some folks were kind of confused about the timing. Like, why would you announce something like that right now?
Because Kurt Cignetti would have been at the top of everybody's list.
And you're trying to recruit in that climate.
That's right.
I mean, that's the thing to me is that how do you recruit in a climate where everybody is linking your coach to other jobs next year. Now, it's a relatively minor concern compared to, you know, the season you've got going right now. But, yeah, I just think that I would imagine when they talk about, like, maybe the Penn State rumors were hurting recruiting.
Sure weren't. I'm sure they weren't helping. I'm sure they weren't. And you can look, watch for other coaches. And I mean, this is about to be a huge bonanza for the coaches that are being talked about on everybody's list. There are more job openings than we've ever seen at this time of year. And
someone's going to end up hiring Haas, right? And Little Joe, even.
Just,
I mean,
yeah, no kidding. I mean, speaking of bonanza, but no, one of the things that we were talking about today is how much is Lane Kiffin going to be making next year, regardless of wherever he is, because there's no question he is the most highly coveted coach for the two prime SEC jobs, and Ole Miss has said they will do everything they can to keep him at Ole Miss. My feeling right now is that Lane Kiffin is in Oxford next year, unless the most likely way he leaves is for them to lose a game or two and not be in the playoffs or get bumped early in the playoffs, because the longer Ole Miss is around, the less likely that he is, I think, that he's leaving Oxford.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what he does, because it feels like he means so much to that program. And, I mean, you could make the argument, there's more to offer at other SEC schools historically. But if you've got Ole Miss,
but right now, I mean, if you're competing for a national championship right now, I mean, I guess it just depends on what he feels like his Ole Miss team would be next year. Yeah. But he knows what they have more than he can project what he's going to have at the other places.
And the timeline makes it a little tougher. If you know, do you want to wait until January to have your coach if you're one of these schools shopping for somebody,
especially when the portal deadline is January 16th. If you get a first round bye, what happens if you win that next game? Then you're playing beyond the portal dead. The transfer portal is open through the first through the 16th. Now your players, players on your team and teams still playing will be able to enter the portal after their season ends. But for the other players that are being sought after, they will be in the portal by then. I mean, can you get them all to hold off while classes are getting started for spring terms all across the country until a coaching replacement is announced? Because you can't announce there's no way that Lane Kiffin or anyone who is coaching is going to be able to say, well, I'm leaving, but here I am coaching my team deep in the playoffs. I don't think that's going
to
work.
That would work if you were going to the NFL, maybe. Like, I think maybe in a situation where it's like it could get out that it's like, hey, I'm the current coach at Ole Miss, and I'm going to
if you're the coach at Ole Miss, Dallas Cowboys, to LSU, or something, or you're going to Florida.
Yeah, I posited that to Jason. Like, could a coach in the college football playoff, could it be an open secret or even a public thing that he's going somewhere else? The thought of him staying in the conference.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
he'd better be commuting from either Baton Rouge or Gainesville to practice and not have a home anymore.
Yeah, it feels unimaginable. And so maybe those days, you know, maybe ultimately it's not all that important calendar-wise, and a school is willing to, if they know they've got their guy.
You might be willing to punt a year's worth of new talent.
Well, but I mean, I guess if it's a coach coaching in the, because I just double checked the dates on the college football playoff games, and
December 31st, January 1st are the first round.
No, that's the quarterfinals.
So it starts Christmas week.
Yeah, it starts.
I was my bad then.
Yeah, no, I almost said something to Jason about that yesterday, but yeah, there are college football playoff games on Saturday, December 20th.
Okay,
and then the quarterfinals. Your round.
All right. So even if you have a first round bye,
your round of eight games,
you're going to be playing New Year's Eve or New Year's Day.
The Cotton Bowl, Orange Bowl, Rose Bowl, and Sugar Bowl are the quarterfinals of the playoff this year. Cotton Bowl's on New Year's Eve. The other three are on New Year's Day.
Right.
And then the semifinals are Thursday the 8th and Friday the 9th. Those are the Fiesta and Peach Bowls, and then the championship game is Monday the 19th. I mean, if you're talking about a coach getting into the semifinals, that gets a little bit tougher. But I think a coach in the college football playoff could.
But you better get bumped. You better get bumped there. And I mean, and if you do and you leave, the fan base is going to feel like, well, you didn't give it your all because you were more concerned about your next job than you were competing for a title. Anyway, craziness.
I think we're going to try Ferguson at the bottom of the hour, too.
Yeah. I saw him earlier today. He said first hour, because he is on his way to Atlanta for the Auburn-Memphis exhibition ball game. So we'll talk to Justin Ferguson here in a little bit. We'll get to your phone calls, 334-321-1390, when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive.
The Drive
with Bill Cameron and
welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and let's get to The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390, and Heath is up first. Hey, Heath.
How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good.
Awesome. Hey, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't the NCAA implement a new rule that players can't hit the portal after a coach is fired until a new coach has been named?
Days after a new head coach is named. However,
yeah, I believe the regular portal window still applies, though, right, to those players.
Yeah. They can go into the regular portal, so they have, like, different opportunities. Depends on when a new head coach is hired. So that is better for the schools that are making coaching changes, because their players can't enter the portal. Now, they can announce they're going to enter the portal, but they can't officially enter the portal until a new head coach is hired, and it's like 5 days after the new head coach is hired.
Yeah, absolutely. In saying that, so let's just say Kiffin runs the table. He gets, you know, let's say that he goes all the way, wins the whole thing. Sure, okay, Florida swoops in, buys him out, gets him at Florida. Well, Florida really can't hit the portal because they've got some decent talent. They've done a pretty good job recruiting over the last 3 or 4 years. They've got good talent. It's before the transfer portal actually opens. So Kiffin goes to Florida. Hey, that's going to open a lot of eyes across the nation. He may not have to work as hard as you think. It may come to him.
Well, the portal's always been his best thing. I mean, he's relied
absolutely
more heavily on the portal than he has in high school recruiting, which makes sense these days, because you've got more of a sure thing when you go portal-wise. Dan and I were talking here during the break, and one of the things that was being discussed today over before the media had a chance to talk with Hugh Freeze is, don't think Ole Miss isn't hoping that they can announce, just like Nebraska did today and Indiana did with Kurt Cignetti. I can assure you that Ole Miss is doing everything they can to try to stop this stuff and announce an extension with a nice raise for Lane here in the next week or two.
Hey, I get it, and you know I was happy when it was between you and Lane. I was kind of happy the way things turned out. Boy, you know, hindsight's 20/20. I was happy with the Hugh Freeze hire initially. I thought it was going to be a better fit for us just because of his ability to recruit. And, you know, we thought it could, you know, develop players, which, you know, hey, everybody's been hampering him pretty bad, and I have as well, but he's also responsible for bringing in a lot of the talent that T.J. Durkin's working with on the defensive side of the ball as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right.
People tend to kind of overlook that. I mean, he recruited some of those players as well as, you know,
a lot of
the offensive players. And, you know, just I think that if he was to hand the reins over to a decent offensive coordinator and just kind of sit back and recruit the team and manage the team, because he inherited a dumpster fire. You can't take away what the man's done. And trust me, I wake up some mornings and look at the phone and think, is today the day? He's like, are we fixed to start over? But who wants to jump in this cesspool of coach hires that you know, who's to say you don't whiff on another one?
I don't think that's a reason to not make a move. Like, I think they're two separate conversations. We had a caller yesterday who was talking about, well, obviously you look at the results and you say maybe keeping Malzahn would have been a good idea for Auburn.
No,
after the 20...
I would completely disagree with that. We're heading down the same road Florida State is. Once they figured him out, it was over with.
So my point, Heath, is that I think it's two separate conversations. Do you have the right guy in place, or do you need to make a change? And then once you've made a change, who's
well,
the...
before you make that change, you had better have an idea of who are you going to bring in that you feel like is going to be an upgrade.
You should always have that list, like athletic directors say. But once a guy, like I look at situations like LSU, right? That no longer became about who are we going to get. Like LSU's situation was that had to, like, you had an immediate. You had an
it
immediate
did. I mean,
situation
that needed... that had gotten to the point where the team had given up.
James Franklin,
and like there was no way that they could continue to tolerate having Brian Kelly, who was never a fit there at LSU. But I'll say this right now, LSU is out there, and with the situation they've got with their governor right now, I don't know that job's looking better and better every day. I do think that you have to sort of look at the pool of available coaches and feel like you've got a really good shot of getting someone that you have high confidence will be an upgrade.
Guys, one more thing, and I'll let you go and listen. If, for say, all these teams have separated, in which some of them need to, and I'm not 1,000% sure that we don't need to follow suit, but let's just say you whiff on the coach. You're on borrowed time. If you don't land one of these big-name splash hires and the other fan bases watch these teams get turned around, taken to the next level, starting to compete for the playoffs, everyone's going to feel as if our team whiffed on the coach and they're going to start calling for his head, and it's become just as bad as the NIL transfer portal situation. Let's just say there's four great coaches. The four top teams scarf them up. And from that point forward, if the other teams sit back and watch those teams grow and start to compete for the playoffs, if not the national championship, for sure conference titles, the first thing that's going to happen is we got the wrong guy. Fire the athletic director and fire the head coach. Guess what? We're headed down a wormhole that nobody's ever going to be able to dig out of except for five or six great coaches.
Yeah, I guess where I disagree would be the idea that, there's only two or three right answers.
But there are no sure things. Yeah, I mean, how sure was everyone? I mean, everyone. Steve Sarkisian is going to stop this slide at Texas, and he's going to, they're the preseason number one team this year. They are struggling. Texas is fortunate to be where they are right now. They could have lost another game or two.
Like the question of who you think is the best possible candidate. I understand that being a relatively small list, but like I had someone ask me last week, like, hey, if Auburn makes a move, who do you think they should be going after? And I had a list of five or six guys, and I felt like I was leaving people off of it. So, I mean, to me, I understand the appeal of, like, if there's one guy you view as the perfect candidate, I get that. But the thought that there's, like, a shortage of quality candidates out there to be SEC football coaches, I guess I would disagree with that a little bit.
There are plenty of candidates. The more openings there are, the less likely that you're going to have multiple choices.
And if you're down on, if you're down on this crop of candidates, I'd love to know what you thought of Mike Elko, right? I'd love to know what you thought of Eli Drinkwitz, right? Like I'd love to know what you thought of Brett Clark Lee, right? Like I'd love to know what you thought of that hire.
What did you think of Kurt Cignetti?
Absolutely. Going in the coordinator aspect, I'll be honest with you. I think the best man for the job's on the defensive side of the ball right now. If we shift gears and go a different direction, I'm all over the defensive coordinator getting a stab at it. DJ Durkin, he's a hard-nosed coach. Get us a good offensive coordinator in there that's not scared to try something different. I will be shocked if Jackson Arnold doesn't start this weekend, just because Hugh Freeze, I think, refuses to give up.
He
doesn't want to give up as a coach.
He said something today, and every time he talks about the quarterbacks, he wants to remind everyone how good Jackson has been on the first drive. Today, I think he used...
He refuses.
Yeah, today I think he used the word incredible. Jackson's been incredible on the first possession.
And you have had, a couple of scoring drives
last two weeks.
But I still...
It didn't look better.
Heath, I still think that I'm... And maybe I'm going to be proven wrong on Saturday night if Jackson's the first guy out there and he plays most of the game. I still think a lot of this is aimed at, you know, that you're one play away from, even if you go with Ashton.
But why do you keep saying that then? Why do you keep bringing up how incredible, because good
people
he's
are
been
asking,
on the first possession?
Because people are asking why you didn't make a move earlier. I think people are wanting to know what took you so long to go to Ashton Daniels, and he's constantly mentioning the good stuff that Jackson Arnold did before that move. But I think it's a matter of knowing that you're one play away from Jackson, even if you go to Ashton, and so you don't want Jackson checking out and thinking that he's day old bread, you know, he's yesterday's news or something like that. I think you want Ashton, you want Jackson believing, you know, hey, you want people thinking if you go to Jackson, it's still viable. So yeah, I'm sort of in the camp that Ashton's going to have to play his way out of the job, and he very well could. I mean, Hugh Freeze made a quarterback change last year. Hank Brown, that guy played his way out of the job. Made a quarterback change to Robbie in year one, and that guy played his way out of the job. So I mean, it can happen if it's Ashton, but I think it's Ashton Saturday night.
I sure hope it is. Pride cometh before fall, and he's proven that he will just go against the grain to show the way he wants to do things. Even when it's blatantly obvious,
a lot of coaches do, and I understand.
We could have went 7-5 last year behind one of the best running backs in the nation.
Yep,
but we just didn't want to run the ball. Let's just, you know, we're running all the way down the field and through some goofy, you know, just off the wall passes, and we're trying to kick a field goal. You know, with McPherson dealing with his issues. Yeah, it's just pride cometh before fall. I've said it, you know, before in life, and. You're right. He's Jackson Arnold one play away from, you know, like you described, Dan. But you know, Hugh Freeze is one play away from losing his job. Mm. I think I'd be coaching for the university and my job right now. You know,
winning is the most important thing.
And that's another reason I think Ashton starts.
I want Ashton to start. I think he provided a spark. He threw a beautiful deep on the Sanford. It was gorgeous, you know. And I just think he's a better man for the job. But I still feel in my gut that we're going to see Jackson Arnold trot out there, just because it is what it is.
Yep.
So guys, I'll hang up. Let someone call in. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Good hearing from you, Heath. Don't be a stranger.
That was good stuff from Heath.
Yeah, 334-321-1390.
You want to try lightning round?
Yeah,
We're going to try to get to Ferguson in the next segment.
Yeah,
so
let's go. Caller, hey. Who we got?
Hey, how's it going? Where are you going? This is Andy.
Hey, Andy.
Hey, just with all the firing talk, you know, it's such a crazy carousel. I don't want to go and do it. I could talk a while of the reasons why we shouldn't do it, and I could talk about the reasons we should. But, you know, with us being so broke, we're selling our parking. We're selling our games to Atlanta, but we're told we can't get plugged into a building because we're stealing the power to tailgate with. And if we're this broke, maybe we should just hang tight. But I'm thinking about this. With all these coaches, you get the hot coach to come to your school, you pay him all this money, and it doesn't work out, you fire him. Even coaches at schools like Franklin and who's the Clemson coach that were, you know, godlike for a couple years. You don't do
Dabo?
Dabo, right, Sweeney. And just the mentality of how we feel about coaches, where we're winning. I mean, a couple weeks ago they wanted Alabama's coach fired. You know, just we're so emotional, so mental. Let me just challenge people to think like this for a little bit and stop the let's fire, because it's just such a bad time to do it now, and it's, more negatives are going to happen than positives. But since all these great coaches go out there and they love them, and then a couple years later they hate them, why not try the opposite trend of hate the guy and give him enough years, maybe we'll love him. So just
it's the way it used to be.
You know,
I think patience in general is the right idea when you're not sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
When a situation
becomes, you're not sure, don't pull the trigger.
When a situation becomes urgent, it's a little bit different. We were talking about that earlier in the segment. There were some situations that became, you know, it felt like, oh boy, you can't get out of this one. But no, good stuff from
One last thing.
Yeah.
Am I still here?
Yeah, you're here.
So the thing we haven't had in a while is stability. Mm-hmm. And we're, you know, there's a lot of schools that are losing that stability. They got the Georgias and the Alabamas that have stability. Someone called in a couple of days ago, and I thought it was a brilliant idea, and it's just so much common sense, is why don't we keep stability for a little bit and go after these teams that are losing it and get some of their players and snag it instead of ours keep getting snagged. And like I said, just try it out for a couple of years. His contract's going to be up. You know, you don't sell a car after you just bought it, especially year after year after year. You know, we can't do that with our credit cards and with our homes. So let's stop doing it with the government and universities. You know, it's just getting out of hand. But appreciate y'all.
Sounds good, Andy. Yeah, you just have to avoid, well, speaking of the car, you just have to avoid it being totaled along the way. You can't lose to Kentucky. You can't lose to Mercer. You got to win those ball games, and you pull off a win in one of the other two. I think that's, you know, everybody's not going to be thrilled, but I think that would, you know, keep things calm, and you'd have an opportunity to take advantage of some of the upheavals at other places. All right, we're going to get to our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we're going to head to the drive hotline. Welcome in our regular, well, he's when Auburn's either not playing, you know, or is not out of town. Usually Justin Ferguson with us here in the studio. Ferg, of course, from the Auburn Observer. He is on his way to Atlanta, where the Auburn men's basketball Tigers are about ready to play their second exhibition against the Memphis Tigers. So we'll talk to Justin about basketball and football, and we'll go ahead and get to the phones. Ferg, how you doing today?
I'm all right. How are y'all?
Pretty good. I mean, a lot of coaching football, coaching talk, and things like that we can get to in a little bit. But let's talk some basketball.
Yeah,
I mean,
we're going to be able to watch this thing, Justin. We, you know, with the news in the last couple of days, when we talked to Andy Burcham on Tuesday about Auburn Memphis, the belief was no TV, no radio. It was for the in person live event audience only, but this thing's going to be on War Eagle Plus tonight, and so we're going to get a chance to check it out too. You'll be there in person at State Farm Arena. What are you looking for in Auburn's second exhibition of the season?
Yeah, I think this is a matchup that's going to get Auburn ready for this, you know, ready for the season, and just kind of, you know, have an opportunity to improve on the things that gave them the most trouble against Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State did a good job of getting to the basket against Auburn, attacking that perimeter defense. Auburn's really spent the last 2 weeks really working on their defense. And Memphis is going to kind of attack the same way. Doug McDaniel, Curtis Givens. I mean, this is a guard-oriented team, a brand-new roster, but a lot of quick guards. Stephen Pearl said earlier this week, hey, they got two or three guys that are faster than anybody that Oklahoma State has. So it's going to be another test of, all right, Auburn's perimeter defense, can they hold up? And then it becomes an interesting tweak down low, because you've got a Memphis team that has Aaron Bradshaw out there, and Bradshaw played a couple years ago at Kentucky. He was at Ohio State last year but didn't play against Auburn. He's a 7-1 center that, you know, means a lot to this Memphis team. They get blown out in the second half against Arkansas after leading big on their exhibition earlier this week. Bradshaw finishes the game. He fouled out, but he had a neutral plus minus, where everybody else on the team was way, way low. So, you know, he had a lot of impact when he was in the game. Auburn's going to have to handle Bradshaw in that front court for Memphis without full strength Keyshawn Murphy, who's going to be, you know, limited to 10 minutes max probably tonight, as he's, you know, Auburn's really trying to be careful with him as he's coming back from that injury scare he had against Oklahoma State. So you'll probably see more Emeka Okoro. You'll see more Philip Jovich. You'll see more Sebastian Williams Adams. And so you're going to, you know, the backcourt's going to get tested in the areas they did against Oklahoma State. I think it's an opportunity to show how much they've grown since then, how much they've improved in those areas. Whereas the front court, you're going to be a little shorthanded against you know, a guy in Bradshaw that, you know, 7-1, it means a ton to that team. So it's going to be a very interesting matchup in the front court as well.
Yeah, Justin. So I mean, what are you expecting to see out of those guys? Okoro, Jovic, you know, matching up against a legit center.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have to bring it. And I think, you know, I think offensively, I like Jovic down low in these matchups because I think he's a good finisher. You know, I think the last couple of weeks he's done a really good job. I think you can kind of see the light coming on for him in practice. And You know, just really kind of getting a grasp of everything. The big thing for him is going to be defensively and rebounding. I think he told us the other day with his rebounding, like, yeah, there were a couple of times against Oklahoma State where he goes and gets the defensive board and he's not strong with it. Oklahoma State comes and rips it out of him and pokes it away. He's got to be stronger in that area. So I think, like, it's going to be a real test for him. It's like, hey, can this guy play the five at this level, down low defensively and on the boards? I think you're going to need that from him. And look, if Filip Jovic is a guy that you feel like can play the four and the five, that gives Auburn a ton of depth, because then you're looking like you have two true fives, you have two true fours, then you have a guy who can play a four and a five, and you can never have enough guys up front that you feel like you can rely on. So this will be a good test for him for sure, and I think it'll be a good test for Opurim, who is got the height and the wingspan to hang with anybody down low, but he's not quite built like Bradshaw is. So it's going to be an interesting test for him as well, on the glass and, interior defense.
I'd like to see, what kind of combinations they go with tonight in the backcourt. You know, we've wondered about who's going to play alongside Tahad at the two. How much do we see Caden Magwood? You know, what's got your interest with the Auburn guards?
I have a hard time imagining a scenario where Kevin Overton's not your top two this season, just because he's got the experience. He's your best defender on the perimeter, and I think he's got some of that veteran savvy that you want out there. Then it gets fun past that, right? You know, you can play Caden Magwood at a combo guard role if you want to give him some more minutes besides just those backup point guard minutes behind Tahad Pettiford. And then, Abdul Bashir and Elijah Freeman are both in their own unique ways, I think, are fascinating players. Elijah Freeman, I think people saw in that Oklahoma State game, and they might get to see it if they watch it tonight. He's got some athletic ability and some skill that's just pretty rare. I mean, there's a reason why people talked about him at the D2 level. It's like, hey, if this guy proves himself at the next level, he could be an NBA guy at some point. Just because he is that elite of an athlete and that elite, I think his offensive game's got – is really well-rounded. And then Bashir, I mean, I'll say this about Abdul Bashir. We didn't get to see him shoot much against Oklahoma State, but he's as good of a catch-and-shoot guy as I've seen at Auburn, in my time covering the team. And, yes, I understand, Bryce Brown and Miles Kelly were elite in that area, but just in practice, this dude is just automatic, it feels like, when he gets the green light and he gets the ball in his hand. So it's a very different type of kind of skill set for him. Both of those guys are going to have to show up on the defensive end, though, as well. I think Auburn's got to find a guy at the three, and I think you're going to need both of them, but, like, who can they trust to defend at that two and the three spot? I think Overton's a good sign. I think you're going to see Keyshawn Hall play some three as well tonight and get Sebastian Williams-Adams more opportunities at the four and kind of move him around a little bit. I think offensively that backcourt's got a ton of potential. It's just who can step up on defense. And Overton's the leader right now for sure.
Yeah, it'll be interesting tonight. I mean, in the opener against Oklahoma State, I mean, all different kinds of combinations. Do you expect to see as much substituting or as many different combos as we did in the first game? I wouldn't think so as you're getting ready for the start of the season in just a few days.
Yeah, I think you might tighten it up a little bit. I'll be interested to see, like, how much Blake Mashalik you'll see in this game. We already said, Keyshawn Murphy is going to be limited to begin with. So you might not, obviously you're not going to see him as much. But, yeah, trying to kind of nail down who works for you, what best combos they have. And, they got a lot of info and they got a lot of data from that first game against Oklahoma State. And then now they've spent 2 weeks getting more data and learning about themselves. And I think this Memphis game is going to be a really good kind of barometer. But I will say, though, I think early in the season, Auburn has three home games to start regular season play. That's time to do a little bit more. Like, they're going to have some more time to do some extra experimenting if they want to, especially knowing that, the goal was to eventually get Keyshawn Murphy back up to full speed at the five.
Heard a little talk over there before we had a chance with Hugh Freeze today. So what's going on at State Farm? Heard the lower level is being blocked off? Have you heard that?
That I don't know. I'm not there yet.
I just wondered if you had heard. I think it was Adam was just a couple of guys that were going were saying that their understanding was that the the lower level may be blocked off for fans or something. So that's going to be pretty interesting. I guess McCartney's coming in over the weekend. I don't know if they're trying to get set up for that as far as the stands are concerned. I have no idea.
I guess I don't know, because it's like it's not like I mean, this is a doubleheader, and
yeah,
first part of this exhibition is the literal South Carolina women. Like, you know, it's like that's a team that always draws a crowd no matter where they're at. So yeah, it's an interesting matchup. I will say, you know, not to get too inside baseball here with media, but like covering games at State Farm Arena, basketball games at State Farm Arena for Auburn has always been an adventure. So I am literally ready for anything tonight.
So Andy has posted a picture from his broadcast setup on Instagram, and it does seem like, I don't know, we'll see. It's tough to tell if seats are blocked off or if these are for
they might just have it all on one side or something like
that. Yeah, yeah, I can't
tell. Like hard cam in it. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. But that's – and speaking of which, that's – you know, we mentioned when you came on, War Eagle Plus will have the game tonight with Andy and Randall exclusively on their streaming service. So check that out if you can't go to Atlanta to watch the game.
Ferg, can you stick with us for a few more minutes?
Yep.
All right, we'll talk a little football when we come back for the final segment of hour number one here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Final few minutes of hour number one of the Thursday Drive with Bill and Dan, and we have Justin Ferguson with the Auburn Observer with us on the Drive hotline. Ferg on his way to Atlanta for tonight's Auburn-Memphis exhibition basketball game. Meanwhile, Auburn and Kentucky in a critical ball game for both coaches, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, it's Anxiety Bowl 2.0 for Auburn and Kentucky this week. You know, I think both coaches feel like a win would help their causes out tremendously. And I think, you know, for Auburn, I think it is definitely just like high pressure mode for Hugh Freeze. Like, you beat Arkansas, and it's great that you beat Arkansas. But, you know, it ain't going to calm down anybody beating a winless team. Maybe Kentucky won't either, but Dan and I, you know, on our podcast recently, we just kind of said, hey, it kind of feels survive in advance mode for Hugh Freeze. And your next step is, can you beat a Kentucky team that you should beat at home and earn a right to have a chance to maybe get a splash win next Saturday in Vanderbilt?
And we mentioned, you know, for both coaches, it could be an uncomfortable Sunday if you lose this game, because, you know, for Stoops, you're talking about 2-18 in his last 20 SEC games with a loss on Saturday. It would be 11 straight conference losses overall. For Hugh Freeze, you know, a lot of that, you know, whatever goodwill, you know, you gained from the win over Arkansas, you don't have, to quote our podcast, Justin, you don't have the shock absorbers to survive a loss to Kentucky on Saturday. I mentioned before we brought you on, like, one of the pivotal things for Auburn these last couple of games, when you're in the red zone, and especially when it's goal to go, you need to be scoring touchdowns.
Yep. Yeah, no, so for I've said it before, the last 7 or 8 years have been, there's only been one red zone offense in SEC play worse at scoring touchdowns than Auburn, and that was Tennessee in 2017, and that was in the 0-8 in conference play. So, I mean, you're looking at a scenario, I think, if you're Auburn, where you've got to just punch it in. You've got to do a much better job of, you know, just finishing drives with touchdowns. And I think, you know, especially if you're Hugh Freeze, like, winning's the most important thing, and like, I'm not sitting here saying you need style points or anything like that, because you really don't. But for Auburn, you got to come out of this game feeling like your offense is taking a step forward. And the simplest way to do that is, if you get red zone opportunities, you got to score touchdowns. Problem is, they didn't do that against Arkansas, and that was the worst defense in the SEC. Well, guess what? Kentucky's the second worst red zone defense. So if you can't do that at home, that's bad news.
Yeah, no question. So, I mean, it's big. Auburn hoping to have Cam Coleman healthy. Got word today. I didn't realize Malcolm Simmons had gotten hurt. Hugh Freeze talking about him hyperextending a knee in practice Tuesday, but maybe he'd be good to go. So a couple of offensive weapons there that we'll be keeping an eye on, see if they can play.
Yeah, it would be a pretty good thing for Auburn, I think, to have a guy like Cam Coleman back out there because of how bad Kentucky's offense or defense has been through the air. You know, I don't think Auburn's got to go into this game thinking they got to force it through the air, but man, Kentucky gave up a ton, and they're continuing to give up a ton of big plays. And so having a guy like Cam Coleman, having Malcolm Simmons out there, you know, I think those opportunities are going to come without necessarily having to force it, but you want to be at full strength, obviously, through the air. And I think Cam, we saw him Tuesday at practice. He clearly was kind of going through it a little bit. You could tell that ankle was bothering him. So I think they're having to be smart with it. You know, he might not be a guy who can give you 8, 9, 10 catches or anything like that this weekend against Kentucky. But against this matchup, you would love to have a guy like Cam because Kentucky is very, very prone to giving up the big play downfield through the air.
Ferg, we really appreciate it. Let everybody know how they can catch up with everything there on the Observer.
Yep, auburnobserver.com. Check it out there. We'll have stuff tomorrow from this game here in Atlanta. Today, Dan and I did the podcast previewing Auburn, Kentucky. I did a one-on-one interview with Auburn basketball offense coordinator Mike Burgermaster that was really good. A lot of fun insight from a lot of different areas of Burgo's expertise.
Back with hour number two here on The Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
That is that's sheer lunacy.
Yeah, that was very, very different. I mean, that was, you know, of course, you remember that was going on like yesterday during our show, and I'm just like, this is strange, where he's just like, yeah, Woodward will not be a part of this decision, and you're just kind of like, whoa, that's not something you see all the time. But, you know, it's just unique in the SEC, because I know you like the history of it too. And, you know, at a place like Auburn, you can make the argument for really since I started following Auburn with Doug Barfield, no Auburn coach has really left on his own terms. You know, you've got the deal where Tuberville elected to resign after that 08 season. But then you go to LSU, which is going through another change. And it's just like Nick Saban's the only LSU coach. You know, if you go back like 40 years and start with Mike Archer, and it's just every single LSU coach has not been able to leave on his terms. Tennessee goes through the same thing. Even like Johnny Majors and Philip Fulmer, you know, with Georgia, Vince Dooley retired on his own, and Kirby Smart's doing fine, but every coach in between at Georgia, not even Mark Richt, could leave on his own terms. It's just amazing how these coaches eventually, some definitely last longer than others, but it's almost like a 96 or 98% deal where, like, you eventually get chewed up and spit out.
Yeah, and of course, these days with with everything that has happened in college athletics, you're less and less likely to see that happening where a coach is able to come in and coach as long as he wants and retire, because the expectations are so high now that you've got an expanded playoff as well. You know, so many fan bases feel like, hey, we ought to be in there. And if we're not in there every year, and that was one of the deals there at LSU, is like, as you said, once you're out of the playoff picture, it's like, well, what are we doing with you at the top?
And Kirby Smart addressed that in his weekly news conference on Monday. He just said it's all about the playoff now. And if you're out of it and you were supposed to be in it, you better watch out. It's just like, this is just where we are now. And it is sad that it's become – and you know what's even wilder is, like, that SEC teleconference, I listen to it every Wednesday.
Right.
And, you know, the first coach is – the first team up is LSU, then it's Georgia, then it's Florida, then it's Oklahoma, then it's Arkansas. So three of the first five coaches on yesterday's teleconference were interims.
Wow.
It's crazy.
It really is. I mean, this is indeed – I mean – something we've never seen before, but I think we better get used to it.
And there are still some tenuous situations all over the league, right, David? I mean, you look I feel like Shane Beamer's season has not gone as planned at South Carolina, and you've got two coaches squaring off at Jordan-Hare Stadium on Saturday night in Hugh Freeze and Mark Stoops that have that have tested the patience of their respective fan bases at times the last couple of seasons.
I would put those two that you mentioned, and before I put Beamer's the interesting one just because there is that Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. I know you're hearing James Franklin, that, you know, but you're also hearing Beamer. The one that I'll go back to that I think could be in trouble if he loses Saturday night in Knoxville is Venables, just because I think that's the thing where they still have to go to Tuscaloosa. And so if he winds up like 8-4, 7-5, you know, keep in mind he's got a 10-win season in Norman, but he bookended him with a couple of 6-7 seasons. So I think his deal could be coming potentially to an end if they kind of spiral down the stretch. So you're right. I mean, you could be looking at like half the league potentially. I think the modern record is like a 5 after the. I think it was 2017. There were like 5 coaches. You had 4 changes during the COVID year, which was strange. I mean, that was the weird one because 3 of them definitely earned it. I mean, Pruitt had gotten Tennessee in trouble. Mason went winless at Vanderbilt. The wheels came off for Muschamp at South Carolina. And then you kind of had the Malzahn one, which definitely wasn't like the others, because he was still kind of, you know, holding his own. They went to the Citrus Bowl that year, and he got fired.
Well, you mentioned that after Labor Day, the numbers 2 and 3 coaches are gone. The preseason number 1 team, you keep hearing about is he looking at the Titans? I mean, Texas has got Vandy this week. They go to Athens, and they've got Texas A&M. My goodness, if Texas goes 7-5, I'm not saying they'll make a move, but you wonder if that spot's still going to be held or it might open up.
True. I mean, you do hear the rumblings of Sarkisian in the NFL, and so that's another one to keep an
that's
eye
crazy.
Out for. The one that would be the weirdest is if, you know, he's certainly a hot commodity right now, and we've talked about this before, though, is just the marriage that Clark Lee has with Vanderbilt, mm-hmm. and that background with him having gone to high school in Nashville and having gone to Vanderbilt, and just the money that Vanderbilt is now forking over for football like they never have before. I would definitely be on the shocked side if Clark Lee, you know, bolted for a big-time job. But, I mean, in this day and age, I don't know if we should be surprised. It's just I don't know how sustainable this will be if this just becomes the norm where, you know, 5-6 coaches in every league are changing all the time.
Although, I mean, last year we brought all we brought all 16 coaches back to media
Correct. Days,
right?
Correct. The so there was going to be, yes, this was natural from that aspect, Dan. You're exactly right.
And I'm curious as to what you expect out of Hugh Freeze the rest of the season, right? I mean, that there's a game Saturday night that feels not only winnable, but like a must win. You know, I think Hugh Freeze could have a really difficult Sunday.
Oh, absolutely, loss.
If Kentucky were to come into Jordan-Hare Stadium and win. And, you know, the last 2 seasons, Auburn's had a November game with kind of a baffling mm-hmm. performance at home, right? You know, it was against Diego Pavia the last
right.
2 years, and Kentucky does not have Diego Pavia on Saturday night, but Auburn – it would be a really costly slip up Saturday night for Hugh Freeze if Kentucky pulled off this win.
Oh, it would erase everything last week did and then some. Yes, I mean you have. I was born in 1967, and since 1967, Auburn has lost to Kentucky 1 time. Auburn, I know they don't play every year,
right.
But it's Auburn should never. You know, that's just something Auburn doesn't do. Auburn should not lose to Kentucky. So that would be a brutal loss. It'd be brutal if they go up to Nashville and get a third straight double-digit loss to Diego Pavia. That would be brutal, even though Vanderbilt's ranked in the top 10 right now. So there are still – I mean, I think Hugh Freeze needs to – I mean, to be safe, and even then, I mean, you know how people can change on a whim after the Iron Bowl, but, you know, Auburn certainly has the potential – to be 7-4. And the thing about Vanderbilt that's kind of curious, and again, maybe last week was a one-time deal, but if you remember last year, the more the season went on, Pavia got beat up. And down the stretch last year, LSU beat him up and won, South Carolina beat him up and won, Tennessee beat him up and won, and he wasn't running as much. Missouri did the best job any team has done on Pavia all year last week. Now, Vanderbilt still won the game, But I will be curious if that was just a one-time thing, or is it a repeat of last year where Vanderbilt's offense in November doesn't have the same firepower it shows in September and October.
Yeah, and with that, let's talk about their matchup on Saturday morning, as a matter of fact, down in Austin. Texas is home for the first time in a while. As a matter of fact, I don't think they've been home since September. The 20th.
Yeah, it'll be the first Sam in a Houston game. Month. Yeah, that's what I've been reading.
So they're there. And this is huge for Sark and for Texas, because this would be loss number three for them with trips to Georgia and Texas A&M still on the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, they're hanging by a thread as it is. You're right. They do have the schedule to kind of get them back in it. But, I mean, this is just a team that is not impressing anybody right now. I mean, if you know, I vote in the AP poll, and you've got these guys all over the country that vote, and they look up, and they're just like, what? Texas is going into overtime against Kentucky? And then the next week they're like, what? Texas is losing by 17 in Starkville? Mm-hmm. I mean, they just do not look like – I mean, they are a team ranked in the top 25 that does not look like a top 25 team. And you know, you've got the situation where, you know, Manning's in concussion protocol. Right. He's practiced each of the last 2 days, but you don't know the status of him, which makes it challenging for both Sarkisian and Clark Lee as far as just preparations, not knowing whether he's going to play Saturday.
Yeah, so Auburn High product Matthew Caldwell could figure prominently in this ball game.
And, I mean, that's, again, it's Vanderbilt has, you know, outside of down the stretch against in Tuscaloosa, but they have, to their credit, you know, they had the huge stage of game day being there last week. And, again, they did not – it was not a statistically pleasing game for Vanderbilt, but they handled it. I mean, you know, sometimes when you have a – you know, who would have ever thought Vanderbilt could have a 10-win season? And right now they still have that possibility. And along the way, when you do stuff like that, you have to win one or two games pretty ugly, and that's exactly what last week's win was.
I walked in a little bit later on. I had a, you know, I had something that I had to take care of. I had to run an errand real quick before we got to you, David. Have you guys talked about Brian Kelly very much? Because that, to me, I mean,
that's what we started.
I mean, I mean, we were wondering going into the A&M game, you know, what his standing could be. I don't think we thought there was a chance that LSU would have a new coach on Monday, but I think you watch that game, and especially the second half, and I don't think there was any way to do anything but make, you know, but take immediate action.
You know, and he would boast about, you know, and LSU would post the stats about Brian Kelly's record in at Tiger Stadium at night, and it's interesting because he had a 20-2 record, which is fantastic. But if you look at the two losses, it was Kalen DeBoer going there last year and just blowing their doors off. Mm-hmm. And then it was Mike Elko going in there the other night and blowing their doors off. And, yeah, I mean, we're seeing coaches get fired after a bad month or a bad game. But, you know, Brian Kelly got fired after a bad half. I mean, they're leading at halftime. And if they win that game, he's still the LSU coach. Because we did bring up the point, Dan, that, you know, with the Penn State, you know, the similarity there was that, you know, Franklin loses the tough game to Oregon. There's the total head-scratcher at UCLA, but he's still the coach the next week against Northwestern. But they lose to Northwestern. That's your third loss. You're unranked at that point. You're out of the playoffs.
That's right. Three losses and you're out. Too. It's like baseball. There we go.
And maybe this season, like, it was more of a playoffs or bust mentality at LSU than people realized. Because folks looked, and what was Brian Kelly, 30-11? Or was he 30-11?
He was 34-14. Yeah. 34-14 was his record.
So he was 29-10 or something. Yeah, he's 29-11 coming into this year.
29-11 coming into this season, which is a pretty good record, but 11 losses in 3 years without an SEC championship, without an appearance in the college football playoff. You know, it turns out He needed to show more this year, and once it was clear they were going to lose game number three, and losing it in that fashion, I think folks were ready to render a verdict right there.
Well, and he talked about
the Terry Bowden effect, where Terry Bowden had the extreme effect where he won his first 20 games at Auburn. You know, Brian Kelly, you could argue his best year was that first year because it was still in divisional play. They upset Bama on that 2-point conversion, and they won the SEC West. Nobody had LSU winning the SEC West his first year. but they just never, you know, 1 year it was special teams was a disaster. Then the defense became a disaster. Now the offense can't run the ball. It was always something different every year. He never could put it all together.
Yeah, that's really interesting that it was. It has been something different just about every year. Love to get quick thoughts. You mentioned Oklahoma heading to Knoxville. Big ball game for both teams. If either is to have any hopes of the playoff, you're talking about loss number three. Somebody's getting it this weekend.
Yeah, I think if Oklahoma loses, stick a fork in them because, you know, they still have Bama to go. I mean, they still have some big teams to go. If Tennessee loses, I kind of think they're done too, because I think what people will start paying attention to, if you look at Tennessee right now, they're 14th in the country, and you look at that 6-2 record, and you're like, huh, those two losses are to Georgia and Bama. I mean, yeah, they're both in the top five, and the Georgia loss was when Tennessee missed a field goal on the last play of regulation or whatever. But if you dig deeper, and how about this, guys, because I know you like these kind of stats. If you look, Tennessee has beaten three teams that are winless in SEC play. Their other power conference win was over Syracuse in the opener. Now, granted, they lost their quarterback, Angeli, at Clemson, and they thumped Clemson in Death Valley, but they haven't won another conference game. So the four power conference wins that Tennessee has are over teams that are 1-17 in league play.
Wow.
So that's a big one. Mm-hmm. You know, Tennessee's got the more favorable schedule of the two. You know, they've got Vanderbilt at home at the end of the year, but the one game that's still sticking out is that next to last. It's weird. They never play Florida in November, but they're playing Florida in November this year. And even though Florida is not the Florida we're used to, Tennessee has not won in the Swamp since 2003. So it would really be wild if Tennessee won Saturday night. They took care of New Mexico State after an open date and then go down to the Swamp. And because if they stumble, that would be a painful, painful loss they would have to deal with for the offseason.
Oh, yeah, no question. And then, of course, Florida, after replacing Billy Napier, it's the Georgia matchup in Jacksonville. Any way this one could be more interesting than a lot of people are thinking?
Well, I mean, you are talking about Georgia that sometimes has let people hang around in ball games. I mean, it's different. You know, they're not the Georgia Bulldogs of 21-22, but they're finding ways. I do like the way their offense has been playing.
Mm-hmm.
I do think Mike Bobo historically has caught a lot of grief when he shouldn't. He hadn't been perfect every year, don't get me wrong, but I think he's I think that offense is coming along pretty doggone good, especially. And here's something, if you're Georgia, where you got to be optimistic. Last night was the first SEC availability report for the week, and for the first time all season on those availability reports, there was not a Georgia offensive lineman listed. So this is the healthiest Georgia team of the season. I think it'll be one of those games because Florida's new. And there may be some juice there. There may be some wrinkles that you haven't seen with Gonzalez taking over for Napier. So I could see this game being close for a little bit. But I just think Georgia, with what they did in Knoxville, with what they did in Athens against Ole Miss, you know, they even closed the gap on Bama. I mean, they just have so much confidence as a second-half team that I think Georgia eventually puts that one away.
Going to be another interesting weekend. Maybe next week there won't be any more coaching changes, but I wouldn't bet on it. So
I wouldn't either.
Yeah,
so, there have been 12 so far in the FBS. I mean, that's the most
crazy
we've ever had before Halloween.
Yeah, absolutely. Always great when we get a chance to spend some time with you, David. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you have going.
Absolutely. TimesFreePress.com for the articles and WGOW for Sport Talk, which is 2 to 5 Central each weekday.
All right, where are you headed this weekend?
This will be Boomer Sooner and Go Big Orange. So yeah, this will be Knoxville Saturday night, ABC. Looking forward to that one.
All right, enjoy, David. Thanks again. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, you guys take care. Always enjoy it.
David Pascal joining us from Chattanooga, as he does every Thursday. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. 211-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Let's get right back to the Drive Hotline, and Rob is up first. Hey, Rob.
Hey, great stuff. I'm listening to David. Always love hearing what he has to say. Which, and y'all know pro football well, and I'm going to think about continuity. Which NFL team has won more Super Bowl titles than anyone else?
Are the Patriots in first place now because of the Belichick era, or are they still trailing the Steelers?
I think they're one behind or tied. I know Pittsburgh has seven. They've only had four coaches in their whole existence. Yeah. Chuck Knoll, obviously the guy before Chuck Knoll, and then Bill Cowher, Mike Tomlin. I'm going to throw this out there for Auburn. We got to be very careful. It's already a really crowded space. John Summerall would be my number one choice because I know people that actually know the guy that have hired him, and he's incredible on relationships. I think he's got the it factor. But Auburn's roster, do you lose it even if Freeze stays?
You may. It depends on, you know, how do things finish up. If the offense doesn't get better, what guarantees do those offensive players have that they're going to be in a better situation next year?
Yeah, and I'm worried about that but you can't do anything out of fear. That's a terrible strategy. But Auburn is so close. And I thought Auburn could win 10 games in the preseason. And the failures at quarterback for a third straight year, Hugh Freeze's way of calling offense, what he did in 14 and 15 at Alabama, that's you know, ancient history. What he has done at Auburn is just, you know, run an ineffective offense, but the talent is there. Auburn, with a good quarterback, might be undefeated. And I'm just saying, the SEC, we've lost our mind. Firing all these coaches, and then who are you going to get? The great coaches.
Rob. Who in the SEC's lost their mind by firing their coach? Florida? LSU?
You won't know until you see who their next coach is.
No, but I mean, who right now seemingly made a mistake? I don't think any of the in-season moves.
Not really lost their mind, but it's the money that we're just blowing away. That's what I'm talking about. And so I say offer the coaches commission-based incentivized contracts. You win games, you get paid.
You can be the lieutenant governor in Louisiana there with these comments.
I know, exactly. That guy's nuts. But I'm just saying, we got to figure some way, because you got to have more money to pay the players. I don't know what Jackson Arnold is getting, and I don't know who's paying him. But the problems that he had at Oklahoma are the exact problems he's got at Auburn. I mean, it doesn't take but one or two sips of wine to tell if it's a good bottle or not. This guy, he's ineffective as a quarterback. Ashton Daniels, hell, I don't know. I mean, you just mentioned the backup quarterback at Texas from Auburn High School.
Yep.
Wow. But they couldn't evaluate him, but Sark could.
No. It was a situation where he was probably coming to Auburn. It looked like he was, but they didn't have an experienced guy behind Arch at Texas, so he had an opportunity to go there, and now who knows, he may get the start against Vandy. I mean, if Arch, he probably should regardless, but
don't be surprised if Arch isn't playing for Cignetti at Indiana next year. I will not be surprised. I've heard that from a very good source that's coached for 32 years.
I thought Sark
situation.
Was supposed to be the great quarterback.
Exactly. I want to get back to what Rob was talking about with these incentive-based deals, because I just wonder what kind of coach you're going to be able to get if you decide you're going to upend. I know that's what LSU's.
You're going to get a coach that would sign without incentives. Well, no, is what you would get.
Yeah, and I know LSU's talking about doing something exactly like that, and I wonder if, I mean, it does not feel like you're going to be able to poach a coach who is in a comfortable situation right now.
That has a huge buyout. I mean, and the only way you'd be able to do it is if every school did it, and if they did, they'd be guilty of collusion.
Now maybe you can find a coach that way, but you might have to shop on the, you know, at shop from the clearance rack, right?
Yeah, absolutely, on the discount rack. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, every coach out there, when you look at their record against top 5 and top 10 teams, Lane Kiffin and he is the hottest name in coaching.
He's got one of the better records. I think he's like 11-24 against ranked teams, right?
But he got his first ever road win against an SEC opponent.
There aren't many coaches that have great records against ranked teams. That's just a fact.
Especially on the road.
I mean, look.
Yeah, I was going to throw that
Nick
out.
Saban he did. Kirby Smart does. Kalen DeBoer does. There aren't many coaches that do.
Yeah, that's the thing. So these coaches that everybody wants, every one of them, if you look at them, they've got a lot of things that you could, you know, oh, no, we don't need him. You got to get, you know, if your coaches, the great ones kind of happen. If you've got recruiting base.
Yeah, there are no guarantees. There's no sure things.
There's no guarantees.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's just got to be you hit the jackpot when you made that call. Rob, we're up against it. Got to get to our bottom of the hour break, and we have more calls. So stick with us as we head into the final half hour of the Thursday Drive.
Back to the Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Thursday. Again, Auburn basketball tonight over in Atlanta. Exhibition game against Memphis, and excited to be signed up for War Eagle Plus to watch the exhibition game tonight. Again, you can watch that ball game if you're not a War Eagle Plus subscriber. You can do so because don't forget all the content on War Eagle Plus. Fantastic. With all the funds going to support Auburn student athletes, sign up today at auburntigers.com/WarEaglePlus.
Jeremy's been hanging on. I want to get to Jeremy in just a second, but Rob's call sparked a conversation during the commercial break, and I do think it's something where maybe we don't see it exactly the same way, because I know.
See, you're right. We aren't completely
the market
same page on this.
I guess, and some of it has to do with
you don't think the market matters.
The market matters, but I think that if you're looking at whether or not you've got the right guy, that's a separate conversation than what kind of coaches are out there on the market. Deciding whether
I agree to a point. I mean, if you know that the coach you have, it's not going to work.
Right.
Then you have to make a move. That's what LSU did.
And I guess that's
what James Franklin, that's what Penn State did.
And I don't think, I mean, I think the market maybe plays a little bit into that decision. But to me, it's not a reason, like, the question of who are we going to go, like, if you've seen enough from your guy and you don't think he's going to be able to turn it around, I don't think you convince yourself to keep him by wondering who you're going to go.
No. I agree. But I would then say, but if you're not sure, if you feel like, boy, we've got so many things in place, and yes, we should have won some of the ball games that we haven't, but could we? If you don't know the answer to that, then I'd say, no, you don't. You don't just go ahead and make a move.
But that doesn't seem to have too much to do with the market, right? Like, that's more to do with your own belief in your guy.
But when you're ready to make a move, you better be aware of the market too.
Sure. And you should have a top choice and things like that. But I guess that's where I'm like, I think that if Auburn needs to be on the market for a coach, I guess I'm more open-minded to the idea that there are several, like,
there is liable to be somebody out there who nobody is talking about who is a great coach.
There's a long list of intriguing candidates. Do I know if all of them would lead to success? No, of course not. Like, but I think there's a like intriguing. Now, that feels like which one of them would be the right guy?
Yeah.
Separate conversation.
Your guess is good as mine.
But it's a separate conversation than, does Hugh Freeze need to continue in this role, and can Hugh Freeze fix it? And that's the thing that these next couple of games are going to decide. And I wonder how much the market played a role when you look at Florida and LSU. I wonder how much the exterior coaching market played a role versus this is an urgent, we need to make a change right now situation.
I mean, they might have. I mean, I think they both want the same guy.
Yeah.
So I think maybe when one made a move, that maybe that of course, Brian Kelly sure didn't help himself in the second half.
That's what
night.
I mean. I don't think that they were thinking about the next coach when they fired either of those guys.
They were thinking the last coach. He's going to be the last coach, not our current coach. Let's get to the phones. Jeremy's been hanging on for a while, as you said. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, bud.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Along the lines of what you're talking about, I lean more toward Dan's thought on this. You can't. And age of your coach, I think, fits into this, too. If you've got a younger coach, if you've got a coach that's in his mid-30s or early 40s and it's his first or second job, maybe you give that guy a fourth year if you don't have any doubt. Brian Kelly, Sam Pittman, Hugh Freeze, these are not young guys. These are not new guys on the coaching team. And they are all having the same problems in years 3, 4, I don't remember how long Pittman was at Arkansas. But, like, LSU's having the same problems now that they were having in year one, if not more of them. Auburn has the same problems now that you had in year one. Like, these are older coaches who you know what you get. You should know what you're expecting.
Yeah, I think that's also something to consider. But, yeah, and you know what else I would consider? And I think this is the case with deciding about Hugh Freeze's future. I think you take into account the situation he inherited. And I don't think that's an excuse for this season, right? But, I mean, as far as, like, the belief that
– Now, I would say – go ahead, Jeremy.
You would also argue that his first season was his most successful season. Like
– Yeah, up to right now it is. I mean, there's a chance this season can be more, but they're going to have to do it on the field. And, I mean, now we'll see if Ashton Daniels can up the quality of play there at quarterback, then you could have a completely different feeling in a month.
And I'll tell you, Jeremy, I'm more excited about seeing Ashton Daniels than I've been as far as, like, in previous seasons. I feel like when Auburn's made quarterback changes, it was rearranging the deck chairs.
I wasn't crazy about the options.
That's what I mean. And I think you were sort of rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic in some of those seasons.
Sure. Like, Hugh Freeze isn't doing this voluntarily. Like, he's doing it because he's gotten to a point in the season where he doesn't feel like the other guy can get the job done. It's not like you've got a young guy. It's not like you've got Damian Craig sitting behind Pat Nick.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
It was the last Saturday night was going to be the last – Saturday afternoon was going to potentially be the last time Hugh Freeze got to decide who plays quarterback at Auburn if he did not make that change.
And I'm actually glad, like, the Ashton Daniels, Jackson Arnold thing. I heard people talk about, like, why the praise, why keep the competition open. You also run, like, what's in it to do that? Like, if you decide to play Ashton the remainder of the season, he burns his red shirt, and you're going to want Jackson back next year. And so you're either doing that or you're not going to play Ashton against Mercer, and you're going to need Jackson to be ready to go against Mercer.
And Jackson presumably wants to continue his college football career somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. So he's going to need to put some film together. And I think,
that's a good point.
You can't get into Jackson's head. Yeah. You don't know, like, is he already looking to get out? Like, is he looking to go to another school? If he has any intentions at all of staying here in Auburn, Hugh has to keep him involved. Like, that's one of the things that he has to do.
Oh, and you're still a play. Even if you decide to roll with Ashton the rest of the year, you're still a play away.
That's right.
Right? I mean, you're still a game away. So, you know, I think the comments, and I know there was a lot of criticism of Hugh Freeze not just outright naming Ashton the starter on Monday, and I get that. Like, I was kind of hoping that's the direction he would go with it. I think that the comments feel like if indeed it's Ashton on Saturday night, I think the comments were intended so that Ashton would avoid complacency now that he's the starter. You know, you want to keep the edge that got Ashton this far. You want to keep that fire burning. And you also want Jackson to feel like he's still involved and could still potentially be the quarterback again someday. Which is true. You know, it could eventually be Jackson's show again, whether it's because of performance or because of injury. Like, these things can happen. So, yeah, I'm optimistic, or I'm hopeful that's what he intended with those remarks.
Sure.
And if it turns out that he's decided to go back to Jackson Arnold, boy, I hope it works.
Yeah, it better.
Boy, I hope that works Saturday night.
And then now speaking of Saturday night, what are y'all's thoughts on the game? We hadn't talked a whole lot this week about Kentucky at all.
Jeremy, I think they're awful. I was over there for a little bit today as we're waiting for Hugh Freeze, just watching the end of practice. They look like they're having a lot of fun. I mean, I was a little surprised that, I mean, this 4-4 team that just beat Arkansas to get its first conference win and snap a four-game losing streak, man, they look loose. They look like they're having a great time. I think they're still in a pretty good mindset. I think they're gonna play pretty well against Kentucky.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I would hope so. Like, coming off a win, like, you expect to have some pep in your step from your guys. Like, and especially looking at who they've got. Like, again, you don't want them to be thinking about who they're playing. But, like, you know, knowing that you have a, you know, floundering Kentucky team coming in here.
Yep.
Like, if as long as our defense gets off the bus, you expect us to keep Kentucky to, you know, 14, 17 points. Like, there's no way those guys are as capable as what Arkansas was this past weekend.
No, they're not.
And I think they're going to have to. I think they're going to have to take some shots too. Like, I think Cutter Bowley is going to have to, former Auburn target, right? Cutter Bowley out of Lexington, the new quarterback there, replacing former Auburn quarterback Zach Calzada at Kentucky. I think they're going to have to go downfield with it, and they're going to have to try to make big plays happen. I don't know if ball control. I don't know if they have the offensive line to try to impose.
They've got a big offensive line, and they've got some guys that have decent averages. They just don't seem to. They don't seem to be a team that sticks much with the run either. Now, I think this is one where the Auburn defensive line could really be a problem for Kentucky.
And I think they need some shots to go in early. Like, I think some early. Yeah, Some early points would really help the Kentucky cause, because otherwise they could be they could be thinking, here we go again.
This may be the one game all season where you say, like, there's no way the other team could possibly keep up with us in a shootout. Like, if this game starts getting back and forth up and down the field, like, I just can't imagine with our defense them being able to generate enough offense to get to 27 points.
No, you're right. You're right.
I feel like this.
Yeah, they
game
scored 34 against Tennessee, and Tennessee was playing backups, and Tennessee's not very good defensively.
And you haven't seen. I mean, aside from the hideout play against Oklahoma, you really haven't seen the Auburn secondary burned by deep shots in conference play this year. And I think that's something that, I mean, I know that's something that's going to be part of the Kentucky attack with Bowley. DJ Miller's a really talented true freshman receiver who had a good game against Tennessee. But the Tennessee – look, Aguilar averaged like 20 a completion against Kentucky through the air on Saturday night. I just think this is a –
That may be why Cam and Malcolm and guys like that are doing everything they can to get out there and play Saturday night.
And on the road in chilly weather, like, I think if Auburn can build an early lead, you wonder what kind of fight back you'll see out of Kentucky.
Yeah, this is by far the best that I have felt about going into an Auburn game since, like, Ball State. And that was because you knew Ball State was awful, and I think this Kentucky team could be along those lines.
I thought Arkansas had a lot more to fight for and play for last week than Kentucky does
this week. How about this, Jeremy? I wouldn't be too shocked if the losing coach is dismissed on Sunday. I know it's a lot of money.
I just wonder if Kentucky's got the money to do it.
It's a lot of money, but 18 out of your last 20 is a lot of conference losses.
Kentucky might do it because of the talent pool to try to get the jump on John Sumrall, whose alma mater is Kentucky.
I mean, that's 11 straight SEC losses is a lot too. You know, Mark Stoops needs to give them something to change this narrative.
They would be 1-13
big trouble
over the last 2 years in the conference.
Yeah, they are in, like, end of Butch Davis at Tennessee level of – or Butch Jones, not Butch Davis.
Yeah.
Butch Davis.
The win-loss record actually looks a lot like Joker Phillips' last 2 years at Kentucky. And it was not one of the brighter periods in program history.
Nope, definitely not. All right, guys.
Good hearing from you, Jeremy. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Mountain High Outfitters is helping you gear up for...
Now, more of The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of the Thursday Drive. Fun show today. Caught up with Justin Ferguson, who is on his way over to, should be there in Atlanta now, getting ready for tonight's Auburn-Memphis exhibition game, a game that, just in the last 24 hours has been made available to be able to be watched. If you are a subscriber to War Eagle Plus, all you need to do is go to auburntigers.com/War Eagle Plus if you're not already signed up. It's $14.99 a month. Tons of content. Andy talks to us a good bit on Tuesdays about some of the things they put there, but you'll be able to check out tonight's ball game if you have War Eagle Plus.
Also want to mention a Halloween costume contest at Sky Bar tonight. Open at 7 o'clock. Registration begins at 8 o'clock. They'll get the contest started around 11:30, maybe a little bit later than that, up to... Well, you're talking about nearly $3,000 in prize money for the top 15 finishers, all told. You're not going to want to miss it. Always a lot of fun. Sky Bar's Halloween costume contest tonight, downtown, presented by our pals at Sky Bar.
Yeah, don't forget trick-or-treaters downtown tonight. The final downtown trick-or-treat. And a lot of neighborhoods of the city had said, tonight, it's trick-or-treat night, but I know there are quite a few neighborhoods that are opting for tomorrow. But don't be surprised, if you have some trick-or-treaters this evening. Be careful if you're out and about. And then tomorrow, we're going to be on location at Rally House in Tigertown, both on the line of The Drive, going to be live. So from 2 to 6 tomorrow, and looking ahead to the Auburn-Kentucky matchup, looking at tonight's Auburn-Memphis basketball. Rally House teaming up with Logo Brands to show off all their amazing Auburn Tigers gear, and we'll be giving away $50 gift cards to lucky fans in store, so be sure to stop by tomorrow at Rally House. That's going to wrap things up for the Thursday edition of The Drive. Again, our thanks to Justin Ferguson joining us in hour number one, David Pascal in hour number two. Stop by and see us tomorrow at Rally House. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.
Of Auburn is hosting
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.